Welcome to The Backbone, a journey inside finance at a startup. I'm your host, Shubham Datta, at Shubham on Twitter. On The Backbone, we're obsessed with finance and operations at startups. We take a close look at finance functions within various startup companies by talking to finance leaders that are in there day in and day out. We chat startup finance, metrics, operations, and everything in between. Joining me on this episode of The Backbone is Brandon Brunette, controller at Kick. Kick is an anonymous mobile messaging application that allows users to create an account without the requirement of a cell phone number on both Android and iOS. As a result, Kick has received wide-scale adoption with its largest core user base being US teenagers. Most recently, Kick performed a token distribution event with the issuance of KIN, a cryptocurrency based on the Ethereum blockchain. Kick's vision for KIN is to become the most used cryptocurrency in the world. Brandon has been a key member of Kick's finance team since 2015, supporting senior leadership and the board. Brandon has a passion for startups, innovation, and disruptive technologies. Since joining Kick in 2015, Brandon has been involved in the $50 million Series D financing, which cemented Kick's unicorn status, having achieved a $1 billion valuation. Additionally, he was a key contributor to the token distribution event, which resulted in the sale of $98 million worth of KIN. So without further ado, let's hear from Brandon Brunette, controller at Kick. Hey, Brandon, thanks for joining me on The Backbone, and really want to get started with you right away. So, you know, you've spent 4 years at PwC before making the jump to Kick, where you've held progressive roles in finance for the last 3.5 years. So talk to me about your journey to Kick and what that's been like.
Yeah, so I mean, I started off obviously at PwC, so I was an auditor in the technology field, so I was dealing with small, large tech companies, and then I got a good flavor for startups and some of the smaller venture cap firms when I was going through the audit year. So after PwC, I kind of found Kick, and I thought there would be a really exciting startup to work with in the county, and so I started there about 4.5 years after PwC. And when I started at Kick, it was around 35, 40 employees. So it was quite a bit smaller at the time.
Oh, wow.
yeah, it was much smaller. And of that group, I think 25% was probably even co-ops at the time. So it was a pretty small, tightly knit company. So small, in fact, that when you do the interview process, your final interview is with the CEO. So it's kind of cool. Nice. Kind of going through that. Yeah, it was neat, right? You get to meet everybody. So yeah, at the time it was myself, the controller, and we had a CFO, COO, so it was a pretty tightly knit finance team. And shortly thereafter, I got exposed to Series D financing. So we did our Series D round with a company called Tencent out of China. Mm-hmm. So that was a pretty exciting moment because it gave us our $1 billion valuation. So I got in there at a pretty exciting time. And from there, it just kind of kept rolling. So, again, when I started, it was just the Waterloo office. And so now we've expanded to New York. We had a California office. We have a Toronto office. And then most recently we did an acquisition of a company in Israel about a little bit over a year ago. And so we have a Tel Aviv office now.
That's awesome. So you've seen quite a bit since your time at Kick. And we'll unpack that a little bit later on in the show. But, you know, for those who are living under a rock and not familiar with what Kick Messenger is or what Kick is, tell us a little bit about that. What is Kick all about?
Yeah, so Kick, it really started and it kind of blew up because it was an anonymous messenger. So what that meant was you didn't need a cell phone number to sign up with the app. So for a lot of young kids, it was fantastic because you could be on your iPad or on your your music device, and you could effectively have a Kick username without having to have a cell phone. So you could connect with your friends. And when you're younger, you know, nowadays it's a bit different, but back then, you know, 7-8 years ago, you know, you're 14, 15, 16, you typically didn't have a cell phone. So
Right. So you could use something like an iPod Touch and
exactly.
Gotcha.
That's when we saw the explosive kind of the growth of the messenger kind of take off.
Awesome. And so today, how has Kik kind of evolved from, you know, obviously there's a core Messenger product, and that's what it was built on, and that's really the foundations of it. Because obviously, as you know, there's a lot of messaging products out there. What keeps Kik going, and what are some of the kind of cool and unique things that are, well, unique to Kik?
Yeah, so I think what they, you know, Kik's always been a little bit ahead of the game. They've been a smaller messenger, obviously, compared to some of the biggest, you know, messengers in the group. But they were one of the first ones to come out with an HTML browser within the application itself. And then they came out with chatbots. So they kind of pioneered the overall chatbot space and started integrating bots within Kik. And that was probably, I think it was around 2016 we started doing that. And then afterwards, you kind of saw some of the bigger guys like Facebook. Kind of start integrating chatbots within their app, and it was cool at the time because we could integrate a lot of external brands and agencies into the chatbots and actually in a way kind of monetize the space through bots. After bots, we jumped into the cryptocurrency space, which is probably the most exciting thing we've done.
Yeah,
yeah. That was a year ago we did that.
Right, right. So before I want to dig into that for sure and talk about that crypto stuff. But before I do that, I want to kind of link the first question and this about Kik. So prior to you starting at Kik, you know, back in your days at PwC, were you using Kik? Is that what kind of got you interested in like what was that transition like going from PwC to Kik? Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so I used Kik, and really what I used it for was just a core group of myself and some of my friends. We all used We used the group chat functionality, so it was just a way to, you know, everybody could chat in the same group throughout the day, and it was just kind of a cool way to connect with everybody. And so we were using that while I was at PwC, and then obviously I heard more about Kik. I was throwing more business development related events. I met one of the executives of Kik at one of those events, and then from there, I mean, jumping into the startup technology field was an eye opener in a lot of great ways. The culture, very different but very exciting. I mean, obviously PwC had a very young culture, and so did Kik, but it was just a very different approach to culture. It was a very open, transparent, and very exciting thing to be a part of. It was explosive. Sure. There's a lot of growth. So
coming back to the crypto stuff. So in September of 2017, Kik raised $100 million in an initial coin offering, or as is commonly known, the ICO. And so first of all, explain to me and the rest of the audience what an ICO is.
Yeah, so an ICO, and we sometimes refer to it as a TDE, so a token distribution event, because I think in a lot of cases when people hear ICO, they think of some of the more, you know, scammy type things that have happened in the past. But in general, I mean, an ICO is effectively you create a digital currency, so a token, and then you sell that token either to, you know, a private audience or a public audience, or in some case, both groups, which is what we did. And then that token effectively lives on a blockchain of some sort, whether it's the Ethereum blockchain or, you know, Bitcoin's blockchain or whatever the case. And then people start to trade those coins amongst one another, either through exchanges or privately, but it's all tracked through the blockchain.
Gotcha. And so in particular, first of all, what was the Kik coin called?
So Kik's coin was called Kin.
Gotcha. Okay. So Kin, what could you, so after you, let's say, acquired some Kin, what could you do with it?
Yeah. So, I mean, initially Kin was effectively used to be traded amongst people, generally speaking, through exchanges. There's a bit of a process to actually get your coins listed on exchanges. It doesn't typically happen right away. So there was a bit of a down period there where there wasn't a lot of trade volume. But really what the goal of Kin is, and the overarching kind of vision, is to create a true utility coin that can be used in the greater ecosystem. Generally speaking, we want to see quite a bit of transaction volume. Right? We don't want to just be something that sits on an exchange and people kind of buy and hold to try to, you know, gain value. We want it to truly be something that people use. And so in order to do that, what we did is we created the concept of the Kin Rewards Engine. And I think that's kind of where our coin is a bit unique. Yeah, so we're working on it right now. It's manual currently. Eventually, we want to turn it into an algorithm. But the Kin Rewards Engine, what it'll do is it'll look at the transaction volume of Kin on a daily basis. And it will determine who's generated that transaction volume. So if you're a developer and you have a really cool video game app and you dump the Kin SDK into your app and you start creating transaction volume, you're going to be rewarded for that on a daily basis in Kin.
Gotcha.
And to get some perspective based on the initial value of Kin when we initially sold it, the daily reward would be approximately, I think, between $385,000 and $400,000 US dollars a day in Kin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you can see if the value goes up, then obviously we'll be giving, you know, in theory, more value out to those developers who are generating it and the ecosystem around it.
Got it. So I think we can spend, you know, the whole night talking about ICOs and cryptocurrency and whatnot. So let's shift gears a little bit to talk about it from the finance perspective. Obviously, not a lot of token distribution events or, you know, there aren't handbook sections on like how to do a token distribution event. So walk me through what that process was like from a finance perspective. You know, one fine morning you walk into your office and someone says, all right, we're doing a token distribution event. What is going through your mind as you think about how to wrap your head around this from a finance perspective?
Yeah, so I mean, the first thing I did is I started trading small increments of tokens myself separately just to make sure I understood how the economy works.
Nice.
And so that kind of gave me some understanding in general of how the exchanges work and whatnot and the security aspects. And I think for us, the first and foremost, most important thing was, okay, how are we going to manage the security around this? Because when we sold our tokens, half of the sale was done in US dollars, which was a private sale, and the remaining half was done to the public, and they bought Kin with Ether.
Gotcha.
And so you know how it is. You're not storing Ether in a bank. You know, if someone comes and robs the bank, you don't get your money back.
Right.
So I think that for us was one of the biggest things we had to identify up front is how are we going to make sure that this is secure not only from what we're storing, but also from what we're going to send out to both the private investors and to the public participants of the sale.
Right. So just on that note itself, as you mentioned, you know, a part of it is in Ether. And so, like, it's not like you get the part of that offering, the $100 million in what is known as like fiat currency, you wouldn't get that in your bank account when you do like a fundraise or when you go public or those kinds of things. Like, how do you like actually use those funds as an organization?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, there are certain groups out there, consulting groups and whatnot, that actually accept payment in cryptocurrency versus fiat currency. But, you know, for a lot of people that don't realize it, there's also quite a few middlemen out there that do liquidate cryptocurrency for fiat currency. So there's a bit of, you know, obviously paying out certain things with the crypto and also liquidating to manage some of the operations on the side.
So what are some of the, and you started touching on this, but what are some of the additional things that you had to do after the funds were raised? So, you know, you go through the process of figuring out, okay, this is what, you know, once we do the token distribution event, people will have Kin in return. They will put in their fiat currency. And so then once all of that is figured out, how do you, like, what changes from a finance perspective in terms of making sure that currency has liquidity, making sure, like, are there any, like, regulations that you have to be aware of? Like, what happens after the funds get raised?
Yeah, so, I mean, like you kind of touched on before, there's no, you know, distinct rules on this is exactly what you do, but there was a lot of legality issues that we obviously wanted to navigate. So, I mean, if we even go back to when we did the ICO, we KYC'd all of our participants, which is something that not a lot of other ICOs had done at the time. And then post, obviously, the ICO, of really just looking at the overall finance function from a different perspective and understanding that, you know, how we hold the funds is going to be different than, you know, typical cash. The parties that we deal with is a different thing. Like, a lot of banks won't work with you if you're a crypto company, or they won't hold any cash that, you know, you've derived from the liquidation of cryptocurrency in their bank.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So you got to find new partners, and you got to do that pretty darn quickly, right? You also want to have that established beforehand. And then from there, like you touched on as well, there's the liquidation aspect, finding partners that you can work with. And again, it's a kind of navigating new waters, you know, trying to understand if I'm liquidating this currency, you know, these guys are actually going to take, you know, a cut of that. Does that even make sense?
Right.
It's such a new marketplace right now that it's just, it's unknown.
And it's not even like a small amount, like it's $100 million. No. So it's,
It was, and again, that's why I go back to, I started trading it on my own at first so I could understand at least, you know, what mistakes not to make, because what a lot of people, you know, that are in the space don't realize is your privacy is effectively this private key that you hold. And if somebody gets a hold of that private key, they can do whatever they want, and really good luck getting your money back, right? There's no insurance. There's none of that for cryptocurrency right now. And so educating, you know, employees on that was really important, but because we had a very small portion of the pre-sale was done with employees. So we wanted to make sure they weren't, you know, giving away their private keys. And obviously we had some pretty, you know, funny scenarios come up throughout the process as people were learning, how to manage it. But, there was just so many different aspects.
That's so fascinating. Again, I think we can do a whole episode, like we can do a series of episodes talking about just this experience. It's so unique, so fascinating. I want to move gears now to the, you know, when you joined Kik. So when you started, like you said, you were around 35, 40 people. How many are you now?
So right now we're around 165 people globally.
Wow. So the team has, needless to say, grown. And so, this token distribution event, ICO aside, what are some of the things that have changed from a finance perspective? And what has that been like to be part of that crazy growth?
Yeah, so, you know, we obviously had to build out our teams. At the time, there was three of us, but, you know, our CFO was involved in the high-level stuff, you know, financing, stuff like that. So, first and foremost, we had to step back and say, okay, how are we going to build this team out so that we can get ahead of the game and not be, you know, behind in terms of getting stuff done? So, it was really stepping back, building a team, and then starting, you know, typically, like you'd see in any finance group, creating processes just to make everything more efficient and more effective. And then, you know, once we had that team built out, it was a matter of being able to manage constant change, because in the startup world, things never are linear.
Of course.
You know, you monetize one way, you cut that off. You monetize another way, you cut that off. You do a cryptocurrency raise, and you figure out what to do after that. So it was really just finding like a way to be able to iterate and change as things change within the company. Mm-hmm.
For sure. And so what were some of the processes that you had to establish, you know, without getting into the nitty gritty, but high level, that you had to ensure that the company was ready to scale, you know? So you mentioned hiring, that's obviously a key component, but what were some of the other high level processes that you had to think through, which weren't necessarily an issue when you had started and the team was 40 people?
Yeah, I mean, stuff as simple as establishing like a regularly, you know, month end, quarter end cadence, which wasn't necessarily important at the time. Processes around tightening up our investor reporting and tightening up our communication with our board, and making sure that, you know, we were providing regular updates to our board, making sure that, you know, in our quarterly board meetings, we were really prepared to present, you know, what was important, but also focus on the strategic side of things rather than just, you know, dumping information on them. And then finally, I think one of the biggest things recently was, again, the processes around the security. And the issue around that is, you know, you can go crazy on security, but then make it extremely difficult to do any transactions, right?
Right.
So the balance there of securing your money, but also being able to perform transactions and to do things as quick as possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like you said, you want to have the currency be liquid. You want to have a volume of transactions. You don't want it to be stagnant. And so that makes sense that you have to find that balance between not making it too complicated for people to transact, but at the same time, having the checks and balances in place so that it transacts securely.
Exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, it seems like you know, it's a fascinating time, and there's a lot going on to say the least. And the company has changed quite a bit from when you started. Do you feel that as you are there today versus when you started?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, when you start with such a small group, everybody knows everybody, right. And I mean, we're still pretty good about you know, building that culture. But as a small group too, you know, roles and levels in the organization are almost irrelevant because mm-hmm. you're just so focused on building a company and growing mm-hmm. that, you know, all that other stuff that you kind of see in larger companies kind of goes away. And obviously as we grew, you know, you had to start implementing more processes and procedures and checks and balances, just because when you start growing global, you know, you need to have those controls in place. It's an unfortunate necessity.
Makes sense. Yeah. And so last question here before we jump into our quickfire round. And so in your opinion, what is the importance of the finance function at a technology company like Kik, for example?
Yeah. So I think at a smaller company, there's two key things that you kind of have to look at from a finance function. One is, you know, you got to be the guys on the front line managing the risk, because a lot of times, you know, you have a massive group of engineers and they're focused on building and creating and innovating, mm-hmm. But not always obviously managing the risk from a legal, from a finance, from a compliance perspective. Mm-hmm. But I think even more important than that, it's working with these other teams and really educating them on the financial side of the business and having them understand, you know, every decision they make has some sort of financial implication right. on the business. And it's a pretty cool experience because, you know, you can see a lot of people's eyes open up as you start to kind of show them the other side of things. And so while you're learning, you know, the technical side, they're also kind of learning the finance side. And so I think those two functions are kind of very critical in a startup environment.
Yeah, that's really interesting because some of the previous guests have mentioned that, you know, finance is a unique position in that you get to touch a variety of, essentially you get to touch everyone in the whole company and you get to work within all of those departments. So it's interesting that you say that, you know, you can work with the engineers, you can work with people in sales and marketing and help them understand that each of their decisions that they're making, which is specific to their product group or specific to their division or function, has an impact financially. So that's really refreshing to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Cool. So what I'd like to do now is hop into our quickfire round. And so the way this works is I'll ask you a question and you'll have 10 to 15 seconds to respond to each. How does that sound?
Sounds good.
All right, let's do it. So what is your go-to online resource for all things startup finance related?
Yeah, so I mean, we use CB quite a bit, CB Finance, internally within our team. And then we actually use Medium quite often. We really think it's a great source for finance kind of tech related stuff.
Got it. Cool. What's your favorite productivity hack?
I think personally, my best productivity hack is I use my email as a to-do list, and you know, anything that's not done, it sits in my email in my inbox, and anything that's done, I file it out and get rid of it.
Got it. And so in your filing, in that system, do you also use like flags and like different colors and like...
Absolutely. It's like I got OCD when it comes to that
stuff. Gotcha. Cool. And so what's one tech jargon that makes you cringe?
You know what? I don't have anything specific that makes me cringe. What makes me cringe is when people try to compile too many jargony words into like one or two sentences. So if, you know, it's the point where you sit there and you're like, I don't actually know what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just you're trying to check off as many, you know, words that are buzzy and in the now, and you're trying to make a sentence of it. No, I hear you. And what's the best advice that you've received in your career so far?
No, I think the best advice I've ever received was, you know, hard work really does breed success. And at the end of the day, you have to be willing to push yourself out of your comfort zone if you want to grow in your role. And if you can push yourself out of your comfort zone and you know, step over the edge of it, it's really the best way to kind of grow and progress through your career.
Yeah, that's sound advice. And last one here is one thing you don't leave the office before finishing.
Oh man, this goes back to my inbox. I make sure that I go through absolutely everything in there and that it's cleared and it's organized and that you know, coming into the next day, I know what tasks I have to
Gotcha. Gotcha. So your inbox doubles up as a email, like normal email, as well as tasks. Do you send emails to yourself, like to update as tasks, or?
I have done that in the past. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You're intense. So
it's my task list, really. Instead of using paper and pen, that's what
awesome. Well, Brandon, look, this has been a lot of fun. It was a pleasure chatting with you about your journey from PwC to Kik, a little bit learning more about what Kik is all about, and then really the fascinating topic of the ICO and the token distribution event that Kik went through, raising $100 million through that, and really your journey within Kik, you know, starting off when the company was about 40 to now has grown to about 160 people globally. And the changes that finance had to go through to get there. Really been a fascinating discussion. I've enjoyed it a lot. So thank you so much for your time.
No, and thanks a lot. That was really fun. I love talking about it.
Awesome. Thanks.